Well, I'm a proud non-technical solo founder. I was a strength and conditioning coach and a sports scientist. My PhD work was in biomechanics. And, you know, I was fortunate to work all around the world throughout my 20s. But everywhere that I traveled, I noticed that we were missing a tool with which to gain insights from all the data that we were collecting, and to do anything that was predictive, to talk about what might happen and how it might happen rather than just describing what has happened. And I had to teach myself MATLAB and Python in graduate school, and it was awful, and I was awful at it. And I said, there's got to be a better way.
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech, here is your host, Roan Malhotra.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. We have just released our global sports tech ecosystem report, the first of its kind, where we combined all our regional ecosystem reports. We previously presented them as Europe, North America, and Asia Pacific separately. But if you haven't seen it yet, go download the global one today. Well, soon. You don't have to do it today, but today would be nice. Today, though, on the podcast, I've got somebody that we featured in this year's report. I've got Jake Schuster from Gemini Sports Analytics. I say the Schuster with a slight German accent, though I might have butchered that German accent. Jake, you tell me, as a Berliner at heart, how did I get that name?
That's right. I'm jealous of where you are right now today, Ron, but it's great to be speaking with you.
Yeah, and I have to say, I'm jealous. So we had this conversation just before we started. So I live in Berlin, obviously, where Jake has lived in the past. And Jake lives in Miami, where I've never been, but was home to, let's say, quite a traffic jam over the weekend for different reasons, both on track and off track, it seems, Jake, from the sounds of what you told me.
Yes, and a big Verstappen win again. So I'm happy about that one.
Yeah, Checo couldn't pull it out. It seems like that race is going only one way. But instead, let's not talk about F1. I would love to, even though listeners of the podcast know that I could go on and on. Instead, I want you, Jake, to introduce us to Gemini Sports Analytics. What exactly is it that you guys do?
Well, we make it easier for sports executives to make data-driven decisions. The way we do that is by providing a very easy-to-use application that can allow sporting directors, general managers, scouts, high performance managers, sports scientists, and coaches even to perform predictive analytics or machine learning queries on anything around talent identification, talent development, tactics, or even player health and performance, all without having to write a single line of computer programming.
I feel like that I should have timed that. That sounded like your perfect, like, 30-second elevator pitch down pat for anybody who cares to listen. So very nicely done. I think you're well on your way to your next funding round. But before we get to the actual product and what you guys do, which you've made fairly clear, performance analytics using AI, which can be used for a few different purposes, I want to know about the man behind the application. Jake, you and your team and your co-founders, where did you guys come from? Why was Gemini the right idea for you to jump on? Walk us through that journey a bit.
Well, I'm a proud non-technical solo founder. I was a strength and conditioning coach and a sports scientist. My PhD work was in biomechanics. And, you know, I was fortunate to work all around the world throughout my 20s. But everywhere that I traveled, I noticed that we were missing a tool with which to gain insights from all the data that we were collecting, and to do anything that was predictive, to talk about what might happen and how it might happen rather than just describing what has happened. And I had to teach myself MATLAB and Python in graduate school, and it was awful, and I was awful at it. And I said, there's got to be a better way. And I made some friends in the technology world and observed what, frankly, more mature industries were doing and the kind of software platforms that they were using to power their operations. And I realized that, like in many other ways, sports had some catching up to do. So I sought out to bring some of those technologies into the sports world. I got to work in pro rugby for 4 years. I got to work in track and field, tennis, and golf. And not every sport is like baseball. And I realized that there was a big opportunity there.
Yeah, I mean, not every sport plays 160 games, is it? During a regular season, the NFL plays 12. I mean, not counting the postseason. So different sports have different, let's say, access to data or the importance of data and the relevance of numbers as they add up. But what we are seeing today certainly is that every action is a data point, and the role that AI is playing in the data modeling that you can create is super powerful. I don't have to explain that to anybody. But let's stay on Gemini for a second. So you use predictive analytics to, as you said, to either help with recruitment, to help predict performance of athletes, to help prevent or predict injury and workload and stuff like that. Anything else that the solution offers?
I sometimes joke that the machines don't care where it came from or what it's about. All data is numerical or categorical. It's all about what data inputs teams have or that we pipeline in. But I think it's important to be clear, Roan, that we don't compete on algorithms and insights. We compete on capabilities, user experience, and access and architecture of the data that's available for modeling.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you don't want every team to have another data translator, effectively, somebody who takes what the application gives you and puts it into X's and O's that players and coaches can understand. And that's basically the job of the solution. So you're spot on there. That is the solution and the UI and think the design, et cetera, which becomes more important in some ways than the core data that you're analyzing. All right. So you're a B2B application, correct? And you've been operating in what sports primarily, in what markets so far, and like which sports and markets are you looking at down the line?
Well, we're very young. We've been funded for about a year, and we launched our application really at the end of last year or start of this year. So we've got 8 partners so far, and about half of those are in football, or as we say, my side of the pond, soccer. And I think that that's just a consequence of timing and our networks, and also that most football or soccer teams are trying to solve the exact same problems with the exact same data sets. And there's a bit more variability in other sports. But really in any sport that's trying to be predictive analytics driven in their talent identification and in their scouting and roster management process has gravitated towards this product.
Makes sense. Is Inter Miami a client by any chance? Have you got David Beckham on your speed dial?
He uses WhatsApp, and I'm not at liberty to share any information about that at this time.
Well played, Jake. Well played. All right. So we've got a basic idea of what markets you operate in, how far along you guys are. Can you walk me through some of your early successes? What has that penny dropping moment been like for you guys?
Yeah, our first partner was a European soccer team or football team who wanted to evaluate what type of players that they could bring in the transfer window would help them move up from a second division to the first division in the country that they play in. And they've got a fantastic analytics setup, but they are focused a little bit more on data engineering and on tactics and match analysis than on talent identification to begin. So using a subsequent series of projects in our application, they first looked at every team in Europe and broke them down by playing style in a clustering analysis, which is an unsupervised learning type of machine learning, looked at those different clusters or different playing styles, basically pointed at that board and said, okay, we want to play like this group. And then they examined the delta or the gap between how they currently played and how they want to play, and then produced through a series of regression and classification analyses, a list of players that helped them close that gap. And then they filtered and sorted by price and position.
Interesting. I mean, actually my favorite story, what you just described is spot on, and it's been an early differentiator for a lot of teams that adopt this technology and can, let's say, bridge those deltas faster than other teams that are not using AI or predictive analytics. But actually, my favorite story on this, which I can share, I don't know if I've done this before with the audience, is actually a player using predictive analytics to select a team that they want to be recruited for. I don't know if you know the story, Memphis Depay, a famous Dutch footballer. I don't know if you know the company that they use, a company called Sai Sports. Based also in the Netherlands. I don't know if they're Amsterdam or not, but essentially Depay, after he moved on from Manchester United, he didn't want to have another, let's say, bad signing, wanted to pick the right club for him. And that's how he landed at Lyon. because he scoured actually tactical data and performance analytics data for various teams across Europe and said that, hey, okay, that style of football is something that I want to connect with. So do you see the use cases now widening? And it's not just sports teams, but clearly players and maybe there's fan engagement, which you can derive out of it. There's a lot more that this data can be used for, no?
Yeah, it's really amazing to watch all the different groups that are switching on to so-called analytics now, especially with the AI revolution that's happening. There's a number of different players that I've observed or heard about negotiating contracts using data scientists on their side, and really the possibilities are endless. And while sports data is often imbalanced and has a few unique needs, it's not nearly as sophisticated as what happens in the financial world and other industries. So it's really more a matter of not use cases, but products, I think. And how can we make this kind of business more accessible and faster and more a part of day-to-day workflows? So I think players using data-driven arguments in contract negotiations will become quite common. And I think there will be a leveling of the playing field in terms of knowledge and objective arguments for anything, really. The question becomes, how do folks layer on their own proprietary insights and subject matter expertise? And how do those things get communicated and integrated into daily workflows?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that this movement where we're seeing that the athlete is becoming increasingly more powerful in sports than he or she ever has been. You see this in contract negotiations, especially all the time. Of course, the way they're remunerated today is incredible. And whether you believe it's deserved or not, they're making the money because people believe that there is value there. The athlete understanding their own importance is because they can see the numbers themselves. As you mentioned earlier, it is black and white. It is transparent. The numbers speak for themselves. So no longer can sports teams hide behind various parameters on contracts and talk about, like, athletes know what the reach is. Athletes know how much money leagues are making. Like, those are all different data points, maybe not connected to the statistical models that we're discussing today. But it just goes to show that an athlete is thinking in this way and they can use all of that data to their benefit. Yeah, fair enough. I think that's an interesting distinction to make, not just use cases, but where the product can be used.
Maybe just to layer on that, because you raised something important. I think often we read and consume content as if it's some kind of contest, like, oh, this algorithm's a little bit more advanced than that one, or this one's looking at things in a slightly different way. And that's interesting and it's important, but you know, so-called analytics is not always looking for a needle in a haystack. It's often, can we confirm or refute what our expert opinion is? And can we have some numbers to serve as a conversation piece among experts? And I think I'm more interested in the uses of these types of information than I am in just the shiny nature of the information itself.
Yeah, I think that's another great point. It's about how you use data to either confirm or deny / disagree with bias or any sort of preconceived notion. So yeah, interesting applications.
Stay up to date with all things sports tech and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a monthly breakdown of the most important developments in the global sports tech ecosystem, paired with exclusive interviews with industry leaders. Get all of this and more delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up today at sportstechx.com.
We talked about some successes. Let's talk about some of the challenges that you faced. I guess competitive landscape for AI in sports is fast evolving. Maybe that's an area. But beyond that, what have been the biggest challenges for you guys to get those first few clients? And what do you believe has worked for you to differentiate you guys from somebody else out of the market?
Well, I think with any product, but especially with enterprise software and something that will become a true platform over time, but starts as an application, it's always going to be a challenge to communicate the vision and what the product can be and will do in terms of value added compared to what the version one is now. And sometimes you get a little bit of so what, or sometimes it feels a little bit more like a vitamin than a painkiller at first. And people will always pay more and faster for painkillers. I think in terms of competitive nature, it's interesting because I know that this is a dangerous thing to say, but really nobody else is doing what we're doing the way that we're doing it, or we are the first to do it this way. And the competition is consultants or teams doing it themselves and building it themselves at great expense and over great periods of time. So on the theme of what I mentioned earlier, you know, where some are competing on algorithms or competing on the shiny nature of insights, there are consultants out there that I respect that are huge names in the industry that might be a easier or more obvious choice to do business with. But what teams have to decide is, do they want to pay huge amounts for someone to come and do their job for them? Or do they want to pay for a tool that is developing and evolving over time that will allow them to do their own job better?
Let's ask that question slightly differently. I think you make an important point about the distinction between, hey, getting something in your own hands that you can work with, or just finding a person to do the job. But at the first step, do you at least now see more open responsiveness from teams when you're talking to them? Like maybe a few years ago, a challenge was, hey, do we really need this? Versus today where, okay, we need this. It's just about how we implement it. As you said, either through a consultant or through a product? Or do you still feel like you need to overcome that with any level of organization, either elite or lower down that you're talking to, that you have to justify the need for a product like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had an MBA general manager say to me recently that team ownership groups are finally waking up and realizing that they can't run this like a family office anymore when these are multi-billion dollar businesses. And they've been patting themselves on the back, understandably so, for having three or five analysts who are not machine learning people, who are analysts, credit to them for doing their best. And they're expecting the same results as tech companies that have 350. And they've got to close that gap somehow, especially when it comes to equipping those staff with modern technologies and modern infrastructures and architecture and tools. So I think that that's really where we come in, is these teams are realizing, well, if baseball teams that have 30 or 50 data-facing staff still feel that they aren't getting answers fast enough, even if what they do is very sophisticated, then there's, you know, that's an expensive gap to close and it will take time. So I don't like the word shortcut, but maybe we can help them accelerate that maturation process.
Yeah, and I think this is the realization that is certainly happening in European football, which is why I was curious to ask you across the pond whether, because we've always looked at the US sports market as a few steps ahead of Europe for a number of reasons, just the sheer volume, the numbers, just of viewership, as well as on sports teams, etc. But it does seem that there is a movement today that sports teams are realizing that they can't do without mature analytics teams. And it's not just hiring an analyst, it's actually giving them, as you said, the right tools that'll help them work, that'll help them get to a decision faster, and so on. So, yeah.
Well, Ron, you know, you say that really well, because banks or, you know, military groups, you know, financial advisories, there's many industries where there are years and dozens of staff that set up different systems that organize and architect data and put it in the right business leaders' hands in ways that they can consume and in ways that they can model and build algorithms off of. So that's a gap in sports where just hiring smart and skilled people is only one piece of the puzzle.
Yep, absolutely. And full power to more tech solutions like you guys to get out there and fight for that that eyeball space or the attention span of these sports teams. And there are a few good companies, and maybe you guys would be the winners of it all. Speaking of that, let's talk about what's coming up. You've already talked to us about, let's say you've got your first few First eight contracts, I think you mentioned. Maybe you've done a funding round already. Maybe you're opening up a funding round. Like, what does the next 12 to 18 months look like for Gemini Sports?
We will bring in this funding round and use that to make a couple of hires on really all aspects of the business, but especially technical leadership, sales and marketing, especially in Europe and in the Middle East. And then really go from where we have a V1 tool that can do a few exciting things in a limited fashion to adding a lot of the important bells and whistles to allow really flexible and powerful machine learning to be very, very easy in the application. We'll also start to add more and more data pipelines. So far, we've got partnerships with Sports Info Solutions, Sport Radar, and Genius Sports, but we've got a few more that are really at paperwork stage, and it's going to be probably the least flashy, but most pain-killing value add that our product provides in terms of allowing users to go in and have fully architected and fully prepared data sets from vendors that they're already paying for available to them for machine learning immediately. So fleshing out those data pipelines, building some foundational or templatized models that we call pre-built AI, so that the biggest problems that customer segments are solving are already done for them and available in the application. And then just continuing to build out the user interface capabilities. We'll also complete our first use cases in leagues like the NFL stateside, where we're in their kind of first buying cycle since our launch. And so we've got our first one or two or three customers in those areas so that over those first 12 months, we develop some success stories so that by the time we come back around to the next offseason, there's a very clear value add for that specific sport or league.
Got it. So you started with this funding round. So you've got an open round right now.
Yep. We're raising $2 to $3 million more right now to make 3 or 4 or 5 key hires and get to Series A in about a year.
Yeah, I was missing that number. All right. And do you want to talk about how much of that is open? I guess this is also a platform for you to invite investors if you want to. People who are interested in getting to know more about Gemini, I guess, can reach out to you, Jake. Where should they find you?
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's it's an interesting fundraising environment right now. I think we'll all have some good stories to tell in 5 years for sure. Many founders running into an exacerbated version of the first penguin problem where we could, do the round 3 times based on soft commitments, but we don't have a price set or a round leader quite yet. That's as of 9:08 a.m. Eastern time on May 9th. Rowan, we might have it by the end of the day. We might have it by the end of the week. It's an unpredictable world in an exciting way. But anyone who wants to talk about this could find me at jake@geminisports.ai.
All right. I think what Jake is saying in some ways is that he needs a lead. Somebody come in and sort this guy out because Gemini is obviously doing great work and they need to be supported. All right. Jake, I think that takes me through all the questions that I had, except for my last one, which I love to end the podcast on. We're all sports fans first, I like to believe. So what has been your favorite sporting moment, either one you participated in yourself or as a fan?
I am a huge Arsenal fan. So the first time that I got to go see Arsenal about 10 years ago at the Emirates Stadium was pretty special. Getting to be on the pitch during warmups for a team that I was consulting with during a playoff, or as they call it, finals game for Australian rules football was pretty special. That's 100,000 people filling up the Melbourne Cricket Ground. But I would say my favorite moment was when one of our players at New Zealand Sevens, Renee Wycliffe, made the World Series roster for the first time. She came out of semi-retirement after having her first child and kind of came all the way back to rebuild her fitness and made the team for the first time in several years. And that was probably my favorite moment working in sports.
Oh, that's a nice little story to end the episode on, Jake. Thank you for that. I didn't know you had such a diverse background in Aussie rules football. And I mean, you mentioned rugby earlier, but Aussie rules is one sport that I'm waiting to experience live. I've never been to Australia either, so you can add that to my bucket list along with Miami. I've had a few guests on this podcast who've talked about it with me, but I've heard there is something about going into the MCG and seeing that that crowd go nuts for some incredible athletes. So yeah, I look forward to that experience.
I'm probably the strangest American that you could have on this podcast. When people want to talk about NFL and NBA with me, I'm pretty useless. I wrestled and played lacrosse in college and then worked overseas for 9 years. So I really like my niche sports. But Rowan, a huge fan of Sport Tech X and really happy to be a part of this.
I appreciate you taking the time, Jake. For anybody who wants to know more about Gemini Sports, do check out the report. I already mentioned they've got a feature in there. They have a round open. If you're interested, feel free to reach out to Jake. All right, guys, that is a wrap for another episode of the podcast. This month, we haven't got our themes. We've done a few themed months. We've actually covered some pretty cool topics, fan experiences and the world waking up to it. Great solutions there. Did a month with sports tech investors, did a month of sports tech in the Middle East. This month, we're all about the report. Next month, we're actually going to talk in more detail with more companies like Gemini or investors or initiatives. We're going to focus on AI in sports. We've also got a Women in Sports Tech month coming up, along with sports tech for the differently abled. So some nice themes that we've got lined up for you guys. Stay tuned. All right. See you in about a week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Rowan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.